there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 399, one away from 400. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a jam-packed episode for you this week with a flippin' ton of guests. Let's start with the first one. Adam J. Kurtz is an author, a designer, an artist, and so much more. His ridiculously entertaining, useful, and inspiring books are One Page at a Time, A Daily Creative Companion, and Pick Me Up, A Pep Talk for Now and Later. They have inspired people the whole world round. They've been translated into dozens of languages. On the designer side, he's collaborated on products for retailers such as Urban Outfitters, Strand Bookstore, and Fish's Eddy, and made work for companies including Pepsi, Adobe, and the New York Times. In 2016, he was named one of Print Magazine's 15 Under 30 New Visual Artists, and right this second, he is here with us. Adam, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Thrilled to have you. We have so much ground to cover, Adam. Are you ready?
I'm ready, but let me start this by saying I just followed you on Facebook when you said that. And two, why couldn't I be guest 400? I wanted the confetti to drop.
I wanted to not let people down in that I wanted them to know we had such a solid episode for 399 and weren't saving everything for 400. So in that way, it was a strategic decision to have you on this episode.
You know, this is very neat to be like just under the mark. This is actually so on brand for me. It couldn't have been better. But thank you for having me. I am actually so gay, so this is great. What a good fit.
It's wonderful. From what I understand in our crack detective research, the journey for you starts in Toronto, where you just kept making things for your mom.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
What was the most prized thing? What was the thing that you made her and said, you know what, this one's a keeper?
You know what? There was just a lot of popsicle sticks, like popsicle sticks and craft foam and pom-poms. I was that kid. I was that kid who just loved arts and crafts. And I still am, like, in the truest sense. Like, I am just the same person I've always been, except now it's more than my mom. You know what I mean? I went from an audience of one to an audience of 10.
Nice.
That feels great.
Nice. 10 plus your mom. So it's really 11.
Oh, I was including her.
Okay. This whole just shy of the mark thing, I think that's going to be the theme for this week's episode, so I'm really excited. You know, one word that comes up, I was reading press on you and I was looking at your Instagram. You know that you use the word weird quite a bit to describe yourself.
Yeah, I do. I think I'm honestly not that weird. I know we all know people who are like, I'm a weirdo. Like, I'm odd. I'm actually not that weird. But I think what's weird is that, and what people don't expect is that you can do whatever this thing is that I'm doing, and that can be a living, and you can be successful and somehow award-winning. I think that's what's weird. So it's not that I'm weird, it's that the reality that this can exist in the world in a professional capacity is kind of weird. To me, sort of like breaking it down for people in advance, like what you're about to see may not make sense, but somehow it works.
I think that that's actually one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show. And there's another secret reason that I'm going to tell you later on in the interview that's very exciting. But one of the reasons is because I think you are one of those people who, hey, we can make a living off this. This isn't, oh, are folks telling us, oh, that's just a hobby, or people saying get a real job. But this really is what you do, is using your creativity in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not to say that I haven't had, you know, multiple full-time jobs. In my mind, I've had several sort of dream jobs within creative marketing, advertising industries, but I've been doing this thing full time for 2 years because there was too much to do for nights and weekends. There was this moment when I was like, oh, this is a full time job, even for someone who's paying a New York City rent. This is a full time job. And yeah, it's incredible. And it is definitely one of those things where at face value, you would not think that it could work or that it could work for you. But through doing this, I know so many other people who have similarly, quote, weird careers in this world. And yeah, we all exist.
Nice. Nice. Is there such a thing as an Adam J. Kurtz aesthetic? Is there a piece we can look at and say, oh, well, that's obviously an Adam J. Kurtz piece?
You know, I think my books have really become that. And that's what I'm so grateful for. The newest book, Pick Me Up, is just so me in terms of the aesthetic, the simplicity, but then also the messages and the humor. You know, it gets a little dark. It's got dad jokes. It takes mental health and self-care very seriously. It talks about, you know, identity and believing yourself in my way, which is like, yeah, I'm saying it, but I'm not a greeting card.
Right.
So I think if there was one thing where you were like, I don't know who this dude is, but I kind of want to find out, it's that book. And I'm so grateful that I got to make it my way without being edited down or filtered by like a sales team or something like that.
I love it. Well, let's talk about the books. Let's start with One Page at a Time, A Daily Creative Companion. Talk to our listeners about that. It really can lead people through their day and through their year to a meaningful way, but your voice is all throughout it.
Yeah, and that was the intention was, you know, we know that journaling is a good thing for us, especially for people who are working through difficult times, who are possibly working through a recovery process, or simply just unsure of themselves. Journaling allows you to get your emotions out of your head on paper, stare them down, turn the page, and after a year's time, you look at how far you've come and realize that these impossible challenges are not as impossible as you thought they were. So it's very empowering, but journaling is also extremely terrifying.
Yeah.
Because a blank page is so scary.
Yeah.
And so One Page at a Time has little exercises and jokes and draw this and write this and think about this that pushes you through 365 pages. And the joke is that at the end of the year, you wrote that book. So to call me an author after that one book is a little bit of a misnomer because it's mostly empty. But I'm there to sort of push you along with the same kind of humor and the same sort of sentiments that work for me. And so I've realized, you know, growing up, I thought that, you know, we all think that we're a mess and there's no one like us and we're so crazy and we're so weird. And when you realize that your brain is actually probably not dissimilar from other people and that everyone's going through stuff, they're just not necessarily talking about it, that's really powerful. So I've put all of that learning into a really unassuming book and I guess it's working.
Speaking of working, I've seen all of these testimonials online. What's some of the feedback that just kind of floors you, that you love seeing?
I mean, it's really incredible to hear. And of course, these are personal stories. But when people open up to me about really sort of their darkest truths, when people get really real and feel like they can trust me, that always feels amazing. And I won't say that I'm always ready for it. You know, sometimes stories like that can really, you know, as an empathetic person, like sometimes you feel too much. But every so often someone shares a story where the book really helped them in a very serious way. And I'm always quick to remind them that, you know, that it's just paper and that they are really responsible for pulling themselves through. But just hearing those stories and knowing that people trusted in themselves enough to write things down and to pull themselves through feels amazing. And even the title, One Page at a Time, is a very sort of blunt recovery metaphor, right? We're thinking about one step at a time, one day at a time. I didn't stray too far from that because that's really what it is life gets hard, but if you just take things in steps, you can get through anything. And to borrow a phrase, like, it gets better.
Yeah.
Not immediately, but it does get better.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about on next week's show with Dan Savage. You're just setting us up really nicely here. We appreciate that.
I just wanted to, yeah, I'm like under the radar and then I'm going to like hand him the mic. Wipe it off first because I'm sweating. It's very, I have a lot of anxiety about being on a podcast.
Really? Because you are our companion. It's so funny to see on the cover of the book, A Daily Creative Companion, because the book is as much of a companion as you are, because as I said, your voice is all throughout it. So are you okay with the idea that we all feel like as we hold this book, we have you sitting right next to us as well?
I think I am okay with the idea, and that is a little bit the intention.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm an expert who is looking back or looking down and telling you, like, you know, imagine me shouting with a megaphone, like, here's the answer, here's what to do. I'm right there with you. And that's how I feel when I give career advice, when I give creative life advice. When people ask me questions, it's like, very transparent about the fact that I'm figuring it out, not 5 years ago, but right now.
Right.
And we are facing the same challenges at the same time. And that's so important, because I'm not making anything that's going to change your life or fix your life. I'm just going to be working through the same stuff as you are with you. And hopefully we both find the answer at the same time.
I love it. I love it. Again, listeners, we are here with Adam J. Kurtz, author, designer, artist, so much more. Let's talk about Pick Me Up, a pep talk for now and later. This is a contrast from One Page at a Time in the linear versus nonlinear realm.
Yes. So I had this moment. Well, let me backtrack. So One Page at a Time was released in Brazil 2 months before in the U.S., and it hit bestseller lists right away. And then it got translated into like 15 languages, and it has sold super well and continues to sell well. And I was like, oh, holy crap. Wow. And so Penguin was like, hey, like, when are you going to do another book? And I was just sitting there and I was like, another book? What? I don't have anything left. And then in thinking about it and thinking about my life and where I was when I made that first book and thinking about all the stuff that I had to get through, all the hard challenges I had, I realized that I made a book that suggests that it can help you solve your problems, but I still had tons of problems.
Right.
And I was like, hey, actually going from point A to point B is not actually how life necessarily works. And it's certainly not how our brains and our thought process works. You know, when you lie awake at night, you're probably worrying about stuff from earlier that day, that week, and from 25 years ago.
Yep.
So Pick Me Up is a book that it jumps all over the place, and so do you, opening to random pages, adding a little bit, and then coming back days, weeks, months later to add a little more. And so it's this nonlinear journey that's meant to sort of replicate how our thought process works. And it's still funny, like One Page at a Time, but it also gets way more to the point in terms of some no BS advice on trusting yourself, on not comparing yourself to other people, to ignoring people who are harmful for you, to accepting your truth because you can't hide from that. Taking all those lessons from the first book and seeing what people wrote and shared on Instagram and on social media helped me make this second book that just like gets right to it. And I hope that this book will fix me, because otherwise I'm going to have to make a third book. And I don't know if I'm ready for that.
We're okay with you staying, you know, the way you are, because we want a third book. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Let me stay as flawed as possible just for you guys.
And thank you. We appreciate, on behalf of all of us, we appreciate that. You know, one of the things that you're able to do that I distinctly am not able to do, and I've seen you post about this quite a bit, a lot of us are not able to be productive at home. You somehow are able to pull that off. How is that possible?
I think I just have a lot of experience with that. You know, I've worked remotely at a previous job for 2 or 3 years, and I'm used to doing this on nights and weekends. So this was never meant to be a job, and so I didn't have an office. But I think that there are some important lessons to learn. And the most important thing is to have a defined space. And that can be anything, but you can't work from your bed. I know people put their laptop on their knees and get to it. And I find that and create a healthy separation, because really that's what it's about. It's not necessarily about maximizing productivity by sitting in the patch of sunlight. It's about not going crazy because you don't know where the line between work and life is.
Right.
And if you spend all your time in one tiny room in South Williamsburg from the years 2012 until 2014, you might have a nervous breakdown and then write a book about it.
There you go.
So this is all hypothetical, of course, but I learned sort of very quickly what I need to function. And so I have a second room, is my studio. It's still at home, but it's separated. And in the morning, you know, put on socks, put on shoes, leave the house, come home, you know, fake a commute essentially to make it feel like, okay, I'm in work mode now. And so I'm wearing socks. I've left the house, and now I'm here sitting with you.
Here we are. Here we are. Well, as I mentioned earlier, there was another reason that you are on this week's episode. The secret reason that I did not tell you about is because a 15-year-old in St. Louis, Missouri, named Leah Levinson, contacted me and said, you must have Adam on your show. Can you please ask him to be on the show? And I said, of course we want Adam on our show. So 15-year-old Leah Levinson has submitted a couple of questions for you. I should also highlight in full disclosure, Leah Levinson, also my niece. So this is very exciting.
Oh, thank you, Leah.
Are you ready for her questions?
I hope so. Okay, let's do it.
Question number one from 15-year-old Leah Levinson in St. Louis, Missouri. What is your favorite Instagram post on your account? What makes for a good post for you?
I think a lot of my posts, you know, a lot of the stuff I'm sharing is kind of made for Instagram first. You know, I share book pages, but a lot is original content that I'm posting. And so, like my personal work, the second I make something, I love it. It's my baby. It's amazing. It's the best thing I've ever done. And then the next day I make something new and I immediately hate my baby. I hate yesterday's baby. And so I think I have a lot of favorite posts that then I immediately am like, no, that's garbage. That's terrible work. The new work is better. So it's really hard to say. But I love that I can just write funny stuff on a solid color background. And that's what people respond to.
Nice.
It's so liberating to just like make a bad joke, but then like 1,000 people tell you it's funny.
Yeah.
It's great. That must be what being a dad is like.
I love that you're offering parenting classes now too. Your brand is expanding as we're doing this interview.
Attention dads. Actually, let me backtrack. Attention dads. That's another day.
It's another day. All right. Question number two from 15-year-old Leah Levinson in St. Louis, Missouri. What is your next project?
So I kind of lied 7 minutes ago. I do have a new book coming out in October.
Yay!
That I'm really excited about. And this is the first time I actually wrote the whole book. So it's not a journal. It's a different size. It's a full color sort of advice for creative people. And so that doesn't necessarily mean professionals. It just means anyone who, you know, loves to write or draw or make music or do anything at any stage of their career for any age. And it's just a series of essays that I've handwritten. And it's meant to be sort of like this best kept secret between creative people on just like how to manage things like working from home, but also how to be a happier person or how to handle the fact that a lot of creative people feel this compulsion to create, and sometimes it feels like a curse. So how do you manage that, and how do you just like exist in the world as this type of person, as a creative person? So that comes out in October, and I'm just really excited for it to exist in the world and build stuff around that and do a little bit of a book tour and a speaking tour and then just like slide right into Christmas.
Nice. That's definitely putting your voice out there in a different way than you've done.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
I am wracked with anxiety about this, but I think it'll be okay. And people at the publisher, they are very excited. So that makes me feel better. They seem more excited about this than anything I've ever done before. So I'm kind of like, okay, if you guys like it, then that makes me feel better.
That's so exciting. Question number three from my, adorably opportunistic niece was, can I have a signed book? But we'll work on that off the air. We'll talk about that off the air. But I love that
sure
that was one
can.
Of... There you go.
Tell her to DM me. I would love to.
She'll love that.
And also, let's give her a little bit more agency. 15-year-old girls basically run the internet.
Oh, yeah.
I deeply regret not being a 15-year-old girl right now. I think teen girls, more than ever, are very clearly making their mark and having this huge impact. And this is like a sidebar, but Rookie Magazine is a magazine by and for teen girls that I think has had such a huge impact in the last 5 years on individual lives, but also in like the media landscape, and has birthed these great artists and writers, many of whom are sort of becoming like legends in their own right and finding tremendous professional success. So attention teen girls, like, you basically run this whole show.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this podcast. I mean the world.
No, she pretty much runs this podcast this week as well. So it's a good thing. It's totally
so
good thing.
She's off to a good start. First
exactly.
Podcast, the next all podcasts, and so on.
It's a resume builder. You know, you're appearing right now on this show is So Gay. Talk to our listeners about how that part of your identity fuels your work or changes your lens and what you put out there to the world.
That's a good question because I don't make explicitly queer work. You know, I think there are certain artists who are making work that is sort of immediately and viscerally queer. But my perspective is that all of my work is queer because if you're a queer person, everything you do and touch is queer.
Yeah.
And so because my work comes from my perspective and my identity, you know, there are lessons I think that LGBT people learn earlier in life. There are challenges that we're faced with sooner. There are more immediate instances of being different or other or having to embrace ourselves and then find ways to make ourselves digestible to people outside of. I mean, I think the average 14-year-old doesn't have to come to a major life realization, wrap their head around it, explore that a little bit, and then package themselves and try to sell themselves back to people that they love, which is not everyone's experience, thank God.
Right.
But for a lot of people, that is a very hard, big thing that they are faced with, I think, earlier in life than many people are. And so everything that I've ever had to experience, some of which comes from a point of a young queer person, has influenced where I am now and the way I think about myself and life and getting through. Because when you're faced with that big, scary thing and then you get through it, you're like, oh, wow, well, if I could do that, then of course I can apply for college. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I can come out, of course I can learn to tie my shoes. Like, everything pales in comparison to what feels like a life-defining moment. And so, what was the question? I just sort of went...
No, you like 8,000% answered it, just about that queer lens, because it is so... Look... Sometimes this is generational work, right? Like this idea of it is so much more infused within the work that people put out there, queer people put out there, if they are, say, under 40, right? And we see that over and over again. And it's one of those evolutions that's just such a beautiful thing to behold.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Good stuff. It's good stuff. All right. And finally, for some solicited advice, and you've given us so much advice already, and of course, everyone's going to have to pick up your books, which we'll give them a shout out in a second. For some solicited advice for our listeners who are just sitting there saying, I have to fill up this page. This blank page is freaking me out. Start them on that path to fill up that blank page.
Just make it not blank.
Yeah.
Just scribble on it. Just like give it a good scribble and then it's not blank. And then it's not perfect. And then you can draw around the scribble. You can turn the scribble into something else. You can write about the scribble. Another thing that I like is if a blank page is too big, just tear it in half. And then it's two small blank pages. And each of them is way less scary. And when you fill them both out, then you have done two pages.
Nice.
So just change the way you think about that situation. This is like my all-time favorite mantra is things are what you make of them. And so there is not a black and a white. There's not one of two answers. A lot of times you can change the question by tearing that page in half or turning it upside down or, you know what I mean? Like you can do anything with a pencil. It's incredible. We all have so many tools and resources and we get to make the rules as we go more often than not.
Such great stuff. Listeners, this is what we need you to go do right this very second. Stroll on over to adamjkurtz.com, adamjkurtz.com. You can learn all about Adam. You can pick up copies. He directs you right to get copies of One Page at a Time, A Daily Creative Companion, and Pick Me Up, A Pep Talk for Now and Later. And there's all of these other items that you can get as well. Adam, look, I think that you are doing such great things in using your voice and such an authentic way, but I am going to make this personal for me for a second. It is actually very significant to me. This is the first time in doing the show for 10 years that one of my nieces or nephews has reached out to me and said, can you please get this person on the show? And it provided a place of connection between me and my family that I've actually not had before in this way. And I'm so appreciative of that. And you actually made that happen through the energy that you put out there in the world. So it's good stuff, Adam.
Thank you. That makes me feel really good. I'm going to ride this emotional high for the rest of the day.
Nice. AdamJKurtz.com. Adam, please keep doing what you're doing.
All right. I will do my best. Thank you so much.
Folks, and we are back with another set of incredible guests for this week's show. I'm going to introduce one. She's going to introduce the next person. We're just going to keep going down the line, see how many people we could get on this week's episode, which is very exciting. But first up, E. Jack Beckford is the founder and producer of Rainbow Fashion Week, an official New York City pre-Pride event and the first ever carbon neutral fashion week. Rainbow Fashion Week is returning to New York City, you know, one of the four fashion capitals of the world, for the fourth consecutive year. It will be held on June 16th to June 23rd. It will be kicking off Manhattan's pre-Pride events with 8 days of queer fashion shows and a loud message of social responsibility and unity, which we are going to talk all about. But first, Jag, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Welcome. I mean, pretty much the show is over. You've just given our whole spiel. What's up?
No, we have so much more. We have so much more. And because you're bringing people with you, who else is joining us for this chat?
Okay, so we have an event called Queer Kids Kicks Ass, and it's a live art entertainment installation. And we have on the line with us Andrea Tyler. She is one of our curators, and she comes very highly recommended. Her company is called Foam, Freedom of All Minds. And say hello to our listeners.
Hi, Andrea.
Hello, how are you?
It is wonderful to have you. Oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about. All right, let me start with you, Jag, because it has been a year since you've been on the show, so we have to remind our listeners about your origin story. For our listeners who didn't hear you a year ago, we have to start with your mom. Talk to our listeners about your mother and how she inspired so much of this work.
Yeah. My mom, I was actually in Ghana producing the very first Ghana International Music Festival, and I got word that my mom was sick. So I actually came back to New York, and then I flew back to Ghana, and then I came back, and within two and a half months, my mom, you know, she was very ill, and she didn't let anyone know. So, you know, she basically looked at me and said, you know, you pretty much did, you know, what it was your dad and I expected. You did the law school thing, she says, but I know you have a heart and, you know, that creative side of you, and you should just follow your passion. And so fashion has always been my passion, and fashion is what got me up to law school, you know, from making jeans, T-shirts, and selling them just to have the funds to be able to drive my Mustang up to my 1966 Mustang.
Nice.
Up to law school. And fashion was how I sustained myself, you know, with the table in the hallway in the university. And basically, I did jeans, T-shirts, and jewelry, and some custom things, you know, that people wanted. So it's always been my passion. When people say, how did you go from one to the other? I never left either one.
I love it. I love it. Now, when we last chatted, we were heading into the third consecutive Rainbow Fashion Week. And before we even talk about this summer's event, I have to ask you, as someone who organizes this, how do you go about measuring how effective the third annual one was?
Well, what we did this last year, after we wrapped up, we sent out questionnaires. So I had my marketing team prepare questionnaires, and, you know, they gave me a heads up because I had to read over, a plethora of comments and responses, you know, and we got some percentages back as to what people knew, what people didn't know. So it definitely helped us position how information is translated this year to our audience. And as well as we found out, it was very necessary for the participants, the models, the hairstylists, designers, and so forth. They knew about certain things, but to the extent that, you know, they took a second thought about how they did something, how they cut a piece of fabric, and so on and so forth. Looking for resellers who had zippers and buttons and so on and so forth, we really knew that we had to basically re-educate part of the team, an initial part of the team, even from an exponential standpoint, from our production team going out to the mass number of models and designers that we have as representative of Rainbow Fashion Week for this year.
So this year's event, at the time of us recording this, it's 52 days away. How ready are you to go right now? I feel like it could go up tomorrow and you'd be fine.
We are pretty much ready to go tomorrow.
I knew it.
We do have one of our curators on the phone, and what is pretty exceptional about what we do is we give a lot of creative freedom to the curators, because we, you know, one of our things is we really respect the creative minds of individuals and what they're doing out there. So, you know, I'm known as the social media pimp, and, you know, that's how I find people. I reach out to people from all over the world. And so we have Andrea on, and pretty much she'll be able to tell you, you know, how we met and how she became part of this movement.
I am so ready for it. Andrea, do you identify, Jag, do you agree social media pimp is an accurate description there?
Actually, I think that she's one of the most loving and creative people that I've gotten the chance to meet. So I'm actually honored just to be included in this whole production. Well, I worked previously on another fashion show, and I worked in just incorporating more social content and how we can advance the fashion industry.
Yeah.
And so when I got the opportunity to be a part of this, it was right up my alley, because not only am I part of the community, but I also have a stronghold in focus and sustainability, not only for the environment, but also for the social advancement of us. And so it was like a whole kind of moment. I got really excited, and I felt like everything was aligned where I could do my part in bringing out, you know, more of the social and environmental component that she was that she's initiating.
Why can I just ask the most basic question to you, Andrea? Why is that important to you?
I feel like a lot of times that's overlooked.
Yeah.
Especially within our, just sometimes we're still tapping into human rights issues.
Right.
You know, and just getting people to recognize us as humans and respect our freedom. And so a lot of times we have gotten to a place of complacency, either with each other or with ourselves. And so it's good for us to challenge, especially within the community, what we can be doing more to advance ourselves consciously so that we can have more effect on the world instead of just being recipients of whatever people decide to give us.
So important. So
I think
important.
It's very important that we also stand in solidarity of important issues that affect us all, being a part of a global community as well.
Definitely. So how are we going to do it, Andrea? What are we doing this time around to increase that level of awareness and get people where they need to be?
Well, not only are we getting the youth involved, but we're also challenging their expectations for themselves and showing them how they can not only create new things and not just be consumers in this cycle, which is a lot of times how we're advertised to, but also how we can be creators and create a whole new way of living in a way that respects all of our individual freedoms. So a lot of that has to do with how we produce things in the fashion industry, or how we manufacture products, or how we consume products or consume food and things like that, and getting it to be more personal to us, and so that we have a different relationship with things that are better for us and better for the environment. And so what we're doing is showing kids not only how they can take upcycled materials, but how they can also monetize and sustain themselves by pursuing more of a creative process and not really confining themselves to the normal limitations that society kind of places on us.
I would imagine that you have seen some pretty remarkable transformation in these kids as they are engaged in this work.
It's also encouraging for the older generation to see how we can just continue to advance through the developing of technology, the developing, and just also the solidarity, because like she said, it's the different components. It's the hairdressers, it's the stylists, it's the designers. It's all these people that, and the marketing teams and the sales teams, all these people that are significant to this whole ecosystem that we're all a part of. So yeah, it's been a transformation in a lot of people, and so it's something like really exciting to be a part of.
Jag, talk to me about this intersection between, you know, between fashion and pre-Pride. It feels like a very important intersection that we put these things together and do some of this intersectional work that we're supposed to be doing.
It is. You know, what happens that I see from the standpoint of a production and being a producer, you know, I'm a producer of products for, you know, women who are gender fluid, more male identified. So, and looking at how it is that we're servicing our community with any type of product and or service, I think it's important for us to take a step back and say, how can we do one thing better? How can we do something better? And so from the standpoint of being a producer, you know, everyone's like, well, you know, why are you doing this and why are you doing that? And so my response is, why not? Pride comes, everyone is busy celebrating it, but there are many people who are out there and depressed. So we have a comment that we say, you know, as you're busy getting all dressed up for Pride, what about your mental and spiritual health? So we have within Rainbow Fashion Week the Metamorphic Corner, professionals, chaplains, people that deal with, you know, our social and health wellness, that are actually working with the night curators to make sure that they can deliver a message, one of our social responsibility messages. And since this is pre-Pride, it's the Friday before Pride, culminating up into the day of Pride, which is the 23rd, you know, we said, why not bring that level of consciousness into all of our productions, no matter what it is? So from the standpoint of our green consciousness, to our health and wellness consciousness, just to us being an incubator for creative talent. Fashion is so much more than the designer and I. You know, being a designer myself, I hate the fact that designers just walk away with all the credit, you know, getting to walk out, take the bow, and so forth, when so many creators made that whole moment possible. And so we just said, why not take that week prior to New York City Pride and now begin to introduce a whole new way of how to look at fashion almost from a 360 degree perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Regarding that green piece, I did not know this until I started reading more. Fast fashion is the second dirtiest industry in the world.
Yes.
Next to big oil. That can't be good.
Yes. And from the standpoint of people who are constantly consuming denim. The people who produce the denim, the high-quality denim, low-quality denim, that creates an environment that people cannot even live within that community. The level of pollution, the dyes and so forth, creates a major health issue, environmental issue, but all we're doing is consuming.
Right.
So if we have all of these existing products that are out there that are coming in from a secondary and tertiary market, when you think about walking into Macy's, Kohl's, Walmart, you have to know these products and service, these products do not sit on these shelves forever. Where are they going? They go somewhere else and someone else is selling them.
Right.
So when we're thinking of, oh, I have to go buy this new, no, you don't. I learned when I worked for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the society, and I worked with, there was a store here in New York called Gimbel's Department Store.
Oh, yeah.
Barbara Gimbel's was the president of the society. So, you know, Blaine Trump, as a matter of fact, Blaine Trump, Donald Trump's sister-in-law was on the board at the time. And during the lunch hours, I used to take lunch with the president, and she used to walk around and she showed me every thrift store that was in the area. I went to Marymount Manhattan undergrad. And so when big events were coming up and some of the nouveau riche were spending, you know, $20,000 on specially made dresses, she was showing me how she was going to the thrift stores buying the very same dresses that some of the nouveau riche were sending to, you know, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy.
here's a rich person who can afford to buy whatever she wants to, but she's saying, why should I go out and spend that type of money for something I'm going to wear one time? And so from that very moment, I just started to look at this whole process from an entire different perspective. And I think that's what we all must do. We all have, you know, we all owe Earth something. Earth has been very good for us, and we definitely owe Mother Earth something. And so no matter what it is you do from the standpoint of your show, getting the message out, creating creative strategic sponsors, partnerships, all of these things are important.
Yeah. I love, I mean, one of my favorite things to talk about over the past 9-10 years of doing the show is doing intergenerational work. And part of what you're doing, Andrea, is bringing in young people into the mix. Talk to our listeners about why that intergenerational piece is so important to move the needle forward.
Well, we're the translators. A lot of what the inspiration that I get is from my elders and how they've dealt with conflict resolution. A lot of times we are instantaneous. You know, there's the younger generation. We want things fast. We want things. But we also can take a lot of lessons from the people that have paved the way. And so then this gives us the opportunity to be a voice to the younger generation who may not have the direct relationship with their parents, and to be the older brother and sister just offering a healthier alternative or just offering a different perspective to help move it forward. And then also getting them to see that we're a part of a global community. And like she said, what we consume affects other people's production. So our rate of consumption and having to be on this gotta have it, need it now kind of thing, we don't also think about the trucks and the conditions that it was made under. So just getting us to be a little bit more conscious about what we're choosing to represent ourselves, as well as the fact that we, as a younger demographic, are constantly targeted. So we're constantly targeted to be buyers, but we're not always taught about the role that we can play in producing our own stuff. So just getting more of a face and a different representation for the content creators and the designers and the programmers so that people have more hope and aspiration and optimism in their creativity. So that they can continue to push it forward as well.
Ugh, we want more of that hope and optimism. Jag, there's so many different pieces to Rainbow Fashion Week. We have the Drag Stars, Urban Night, but you know that I have to pivot back to what would be my favorite part of the whole event, and that, of course, is the Rainbow Tots and Pets.
You want to hear about it.
I not only want to hear about it, I somehow have to get my cat into the mix.
Well, this year we don't have Rainbow Pets on the roster. We have Rainbow Tots. We do take some shows in and some shows out. So we are definitely bringing that one back. So you have time to get ready for Rainbow Pets last year.
Okay.
But our Rainbow Tots show, and it's interesting that you said that because I just had a meeting this afternoon about a 13-year-old in New Jersey that is, you know, pretty much since she's been 10, she's been putting on upcycling shows, you know, little shows that she's participated in. And someone reached out to me and said, Jag, you know, I need this young person to see what it is that you're doing, because what it is you're doing is what she's trying to do almost as an infant. But she has it within herself to know this is something that's important. So prior to her show, she actually teaches her demographic. She talks to them. She does a little presentation. And I said, you know what? I said, that's the exact type of individual that we embrace. To have a space beyond something just small where they're talking only to this group that, you know, she's identified as her peers, but to be able to talk to adults because they haven't taken the time to even consider that there are small things that they can do as well. So we look for these types of designers. We look for the youth designers. And there's another one who has a line called Chunk Line. And I think, as a matter of fact, I think she recently got a retail distribution deal. So because of the type of exposure that Rainbow Fashion Week has been giving the designers, the young models, it just continues to be a show. The two producers, I actually call them producers, the two producers of that show is a husband and wife, and they actually have three children, which are probably some of the best models I've seen hit the runway. I mean, I can walk into a space and say, okay, so I need you to imagine a T, or I need you to imagine an L, and they can have a short amount of time, space to walk, but they can execute on point with precision. And I'll do it with adults sitting in the room because, you know, we are all inclusive, and some people don't come with a lot of model experience, but I think it's really great for us to bring, like you said, the intersectional bringing together of older and younger, because now you'll have 20, 30 something looking at 5, 7, and 9 something. And they're actually learning from them, opposed to just the kids thinking that everything is to be learned from the adults. So, you know, we're looking forward for the show this year. I look forward to the show every year. Samsung Galaxy, thank you guys. They have more tablets for us. Razer has given us some motorized scooters that we give away to the kids. And so, you know, we're just looking to continue to grow, and I very much love that show.
I don't even think Andrea and I can execute the runway like that. Maybe I should speak from the eye. I can't. I bet you Andrea can, but we'll get into that on another call.
These kids are awesome.
Last question. I will ask you both the same question. Andrea, I'll start with you. This is going to make such a difference. It raises awareness. We're bringing in different themes that should be there all the time, but we know that we have to work to get them on the table. But what do you, Andrea, get out of doing this work? How does it feed you?
People always ask me, like, what's my dream? And my dream is to help other people discover and live theirs. So a lot of times I get to work with different creatives and either helping them in a discovery phase and introduce them to new concepts or just connecting new concepts, like how marketing affects sales and the sales affect business and the or how you can be your own entrepreneur, or just the fact that I'm just a part of other people's dream and helping them expand their vision or clarify their vision. So I just like to be a part, a facilitator. And I continuously get inspired by people's passion and people's creativity and just connecting to other people and involving myself.
Such good stuff. And Jag, we finish with you. What do you get? I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for me to just read the press release for Rainbow Fashion Week. So I would imagine that it's even more work to put it all together. How does this feed you?
It's a lot of work, but it's a work that is well worth the investment. One of the things that feeds me are the relationships that are forged, either they be strategic, spiritual. You know, spirit has spoken to me and says, call so-and-so, reach out to so-and-so. And I would never could imagine what the result of the relationship is. And so in following my spirit, I've met and connected to so many people. So as I said, from growing exponentially and watching how Rainbow Fashion Week has just grown exponentially and how our production team, our sponsors, and just supporters, we just had a casting on a Saturday, and we probably had, I think we had two people that came in from Virginia, and they came on the bus. Philadelphia, trans man came in from Philadelphia. He missed the last casting. Two people, one's on the line, they came up from Delaware and then Maryland, I believe. So, you know, people are coming up on their own dime because of what this means. They're coming up on their own dime, and if I cannot say, I do not hear this, every time we are, you know, together, people say the energy, Jag, is amazing. People always say that to me. They was like, oh my God, the energy feels so good because we are coming together for one purpose. And so it's a movement. It's not just, you know, a fashion event. One of our, you know, taglines, the hashtags is not your average fashion week. One nation under the rainbow, because we're an all-inclusive brand, and 8 days of queer. So we definitely are looking forward to seeing you at some point. Hopefully you make it to one of the shows. And being back on the show again next year.
There it is. There it is. Listeners, this is what we need you to do. You can stroll on over to rainbowfashionweek.com. That's rainbowfashionweek.com. You can learn all about Rainbow Fashion Week. This year, it is June 16th to June 23rd. It is an official New York City pre-Pride event, and holy cow, are they making a difference. Jag, Andrea, just do exactly what you're doing. Have the most amazing event, and on behalf of the whole community, thank you for your efforts.
Thank you so much. Oh my God.
Folks, and we are back. Well, we have just a little bit of time left on this week's episode, so let's get to some of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. A Republican senator has now apologized after suggesting to school children that men in dresses are asking for violent beatings. Yeah. GOP Senator Mike Enzi, who is the senior United States Senator from Wyoming, made the claim while speaking to young students at Grable High School, right there in Wyoming. When he was asked about his views on the LGBT community, Senator Enzi said this, quote, "We always say that in Wyoming you can be just about anything you want to be as long as you don't push it in somebody's face. I know a guy who wears a tutu and goes to bars on Friday night and is always surprised that he gets in fights. Well, he kind of asks for it. That's the way that he winds up with that kind of problem." He then went on to say, "There's a lot of things that don't have a federal one-size-fits-all solution. Everything can't be done by law." The senator initially refused to comment on his comments, but issued a statement after more media outlets picked up the story. He said this to the Huffington Post, quote, "No person, including LGBT individuals, should feel unsafe in their community. My message was intended specifically to be about promoting respect and tolerance towards each other. I regret a poor choice of words during part of my presentation." Huh. A poor choice of words during part of my presentation, which apparently was supposed to have a message about promoting respect and tolerance towards each other, except for the part where he told these high school kids that a guy who gets into fights is asking for it because he wears a dress. So except for that, he really did mean respect and tolerance. Interesting. There was some concern as President Trump was set to review all of the national monuments in the country. That concern was that it would affect the designation of the Stonewall Inn. Well, it turns out the Stonewall Inn has been granted an exemption from Donald Trump's review of national monuments designated by Barack Obama. New York's Stonewall Inn has a unique status in LGBT history, of course, as the birthplace of the 1969 riots that sparked the early equal rights movement. President Obama last year had designated the site as a national monument, saying this, quote, "Stonewall will be our first national monument to tell the story of the struggle for LGBT rights." A question mark was put over its status earlier this week as the White House gave signals that there was to be an executive order to review all monuments designated by President Obama. Speaking to the Salt Lake Tribune, a White House official had said the order would mandate a review of all national monument designations in the past 21 years to discern whether the monuments are within the law's intent. However, the Stonewall Inn was granted a reprieve under the final wording of the order signed by the president. The text of the order clarifies that it would only apply to national monuments greater than 100,000 acres, exempting smaller monuments proclaimed by President Obama due to cultural or historical significance. So all is well. There will not be any review of the Stonewall Inn, but we could certainly see how that would be a concern. Senate Democrats have reintroduced a bill which would federally ban the practice of gay conversion therapy. Lawmakers in the Senate reintroduced the Therapeutic Fraud Prevention Act. It was brought back by Senators Patty Murray of Washington and Cory Booker of my home state of New Jersey. The reintroduction of the bill is part of new efforts to outlaw the practice of gay cure or conversion therapy across the United States. Senator Murray, in a statement, said the Trump administration's attitude towards LGBTQ issues is a reason the bill has been introduced. She said this, quote, "On this and so many other issues impacting the LGBTQ community, the Trump administration has laid out a hateful, damaging agenda to undo hard-won progress, divide our communities, and hurt our friends, neighbors, and family members just because of who they are or who they love." Cory Booker, Senator Booker, added this in a statement, quote, "So-called conversion therapy isn't therapy at all. It's a torturous, fraudulent practice that has been repeatedly condemned by medical professionals and has no place in our country." So we will see what happens with that. That is Senate Democrats reintroducing the Therapeutic Fraud Prevention Act. We want that to go through. We'll actually be talking about that on next week's episode, the 400th episode, when we will be joined by Dan Savage, the legendary Dan Savage, and historian Nathaniel Frank, who's got a new book out, and he does incredible, incredible work collecting research on important issues like conversion therapy. Some news on Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio, who recently urged President Trump to sign an anti-LGBT religious freedom order, has condemned violence against gay and bisexual men in Chechnya. Respected newspaper Novaya Gazeta originally reported that gay men were being held in two concentration camp-style prisons in the region, reports initially centered on two different jails. Journalists have said that they've uncovered evidence of a further four prisons. Well, Marco Rubio has said this, quote, "We should use our voice on the global stage to call attention to these horrifying acts and to ensure that they are condemned in an appropriate way, ultimately in the hopes that they will be stopped." And there was a lot of blowback. I saw a lot of blowback about this on social media saying, Marco Rubio is not our friend. Marco Rubio is not our friend. Sure, Marco Rubio is not campaigning for or championing LGBTQ rights, but I'm also not going to say that his words don't have some weight. So I'm all for Marco Rubio decrying what is happening in Chechnya. We can have both of these things at the same time. We must resist that duality where we label people, well, he's an enemy, so we don't even want him speaking out on LGBTQ issues. No, I'm okay with Marco Rubio saying, hey, we should probably do something about this horrible, horrible situation that is happening in Chechnya. That is not a bad thing. And finally, some really happy news. A student has made history by becoming his school's first ever transgender prom king. Alan Belmont was the winner of North Central High School Prom King, beating the other finalists to don the sash and crown. The 17-year-old was a popular choice for prom king as he attended the competition with his girlfriend. The teen said he wanted to raise awareness of trans issues through winning the competition, but that it was not about popularity. He said this, quote, "It was honestly one of the most heartwarming feelings that I've ever felt, just to feel an audience of my peers and an audience of believers in progression, to hear that my peers were on the same page that I was incredible, and to know that there were juniors I hadn't met yet who voted for me was incredible." We love that story. Congratulations to Alan Belmont and our whole community. He has become the first ever transgender prom king at North Central High School. Love it. Absolutely love it. And that, my friends, is all the time that we have for this week's 399th episode. Next week, I can't believe it, episode number 400. Episode number 400. That is a lot of episodes. Our thanks, of course, to Adam J. Kurtz and all the great work that he is doing. Visit him at adamjkurtz.com. And, of course, to everybody involved in Rainbow Fashion Week, we love that. Hey, if you haven't done so yet, go out there and go pick up my book. Just go to Amazon, type in Ken Schneck, or type in Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The name of my book, Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. You can pick it up. The reviews are coming in. in. It has been an incredible experience so far. I can't wait till people actually have it, which won't happen until May 23rd, but you can pre-order it right now on Amazon. That would, of course, mean the world to me, and you'll get something out of it. You'll get a pretty cool book. I'm just saying. Go do that. Get out there, folks. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, to make a difference for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?